Well, that is my time. You've left to the sounds of Kellen 303 Spectrum Audio on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, in New York City and in Rockland County at 91.9 FM, and online at WFMU.org. Thank you all for listening. You got Miracle Nutrition up next. Keep it locked. And I'll see you soon.
Welcome to Miracle Nutrition. Oh, wait, I got a good Thanksgiving. I'm going to make up a Thanksgiving. We gather together to ask the Lord's blessing. The Lord says, didn't I just bless you? We say, yes, Lord, but we lost that last blessing. So please, could you give us another one now? The Lord said, oh my God, this is getting tedious. Just please keep this blessing somewhere safe right now. All right, we've got it. Go ahead and give the blessing. The Lord said, bless you. Did somebody sneeze? On the first day of Thanksgiving, my true love gave to me meat in a box. And some pie and some socks. What a lucky fella I am. I'm thankful for Thanksgiving. I just wrote that for you. Oh my goodness, I'm thankful for you. Happy Thanksgiving. Now, what is Thanksgiving? Well, it's a holiday, but it doesn't have to be. We can make it with a small T Thanksgiving. Small T, large H to Thanksgiving or something. I don't know. But let's just give thanks. And we can do that in so many ways. I'm going to tell you some stories about meals that people had together for which they were thankful. I just watched the 1954 CinemaScope masterpiece. I think it's CinemaScope. I get it confused with VistaVision. 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. How far is 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea? The other side of the globe, I think. No, it's how, that's the distance they went under the sea, not the depth. Oh my goodness, I'm glad you're not captain. Well, they did have a captain on this submarine, and it was Captain Nemo, the captain of the Nautilus. Now you say Nautilus, the Bob James song that's often sampled in my favorite hip-hop tunes? Well, yes. It is the same, the origin of it is the same. Now, Captain Nemo had these folks on his ship because he had destroyed their ship. That's what he did. He had named the ship Ramalama Ding Dong. And everybody said, that's cringy. Name is something tough. And he goes, Nautilus. Well, that's not super tough, but that's better than the previous. So they rammed a ship that had on it Kirk Douglas, Paul Lucas, and Laszlo Lowenstein. Now, you might know him by his stage name, Shemp. No, it's Peter Lorre. But Shemp would have been better. Except that I think he had just died. Isn't that crazy? 54, 55, I think Shemp was dead. And, you know, he could have been in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And I think it would have been, but, you know, I got a whale of a tale to tell you all. I don't know what he had done the Kirk Douglas part. What an interesting fellow that Kirk Douglas was. Oh, my goodness. He was so full of something, amphetamines or I don't know what, but he, if you saw him now, you'd go like, wow, he's on some serious, some kind of speed or something because his jaw's all clenched. He's talking like this. And he's like really super hyper. And can't unclench his jaw. And I love it. I love it. It was great to see. And I'm not going to do a Peter Lorre impression because when I was coming up, every impressionist, and there were lots of them, would do impressions of Peter Lorre. As a kid, I heard impressions of celebrities before I ever saw them because we didn't have movie channels or what have you. So somebody would, come on and say, you know, I'd like to take off on Georgie Jessel, you know, and I don't know who that, I'm thinking, I don't know who that is. Now I'm like, oh, right, the Toastmaster. But Toastmaster General, I meant to say. What are you talking about? See, exactly. So they're all on this submarine. Oh, my goodness. What if it, imagine, if you will, it's Thanksgiving aboard the Nautilus.
The entire feast you see before you is made of whale poop.
It wasn't really. He said something like that. Everything had come from the sea. And it wasn't whale,
not whale poop. Some excretion of the whale. The sperm whale.
I wish it was a different kind of whale.
It doesn't matter. But it's, we're all eating ambergris. Also, whales excrete something that looks like a whole roast turkey. We're eating that.
Oh, that's nasty. Now you're not going to want to eat a lot of the children going, go, Mama, I don't want to eat that. That's a whale duty. It isn't a whale duty. It's a roast turkey. But I won't eat that either. I'm a vegan. Well, then, everything that you eat could come from the sea, like fish.
I'm a vegan.
Well, there are other things in the sea, like barnacles that are alive. I don't know. There's seaweed. Anything can be made of seaweed, as we know. There is so much in Japan, they harvest it, you know, at the coast of Hokkaido. They're pulling in that nori or what have you, and like Captain Nemo, what he would do is make cigars out of it. There's a scene where he's on there and they're smoking cigars on a sub. Okay, let that sink in for a minute, right?
Well, we've got this tiny submarine. Spark one up, shall we? Cigars, pipes, light our farts or something? What's an appropriate thing to do in a submarine that would...
So they smoke the cigar, and they're smoking the cigar, and the professor says, you know, what is this? This is it.
And he says, this is seaweed.
It's not. And I'll tell you how I know he's lying. First of all, he's got a submarine, and he's clearly in the Caribbean.
Or the Caribbean?
Either one. You could be either place. And what's there? Cuba and all, and many cigars. So even back then. And it's supposed to be the 19th century. And I don't know exactly what year. We'd stumble into the Civil War would be funny. Like, you know, the fellows on the Hunley, the Civil War submarine, the Hunley, which was not nearly as nice as the Nautilus. I'm not going to lie to you. They'd made it out of an old oil tank or something. And then there was like 8 Confederate soldiers. They probably just needed. But the fellas like, y'all are coming with me.
All right.
They all got in a submarine, and they went and they hit a ship, and then they didn't have any exit strategy, so to speak. So they just glurg, glurg, glurg to the bottom, and they sat there in their little submarine coffin until the air ran out. Years later, they pulled it up. They found it. And they pulled up the Hunley with all those fellas still in there. And someone went, oh, thank God. Except that they were skeletons. So they weren't really there anymore. Actually, they were just like feet in shoes. I don't know if there was much left of them. They have their shoes with the foot still in them and then nothing. That's a lot of times if you perish at sea, they'll be like, oh, at least my foot made it. So they found this at the same time. The Russian submarine, the Kursk, had sunk with all hands on board. And unfortunately, attached to those hands were many sailors, and they had souls. And so this was very, very sad. And, you know, say, well, we lost all these modern humans, but we resurrected a handful of old Confederate soldier corpses. So does it even out? No, I don't know whether... Oh my goodness, there's so much I don't understand about submarines. I know that a lot of times you go down in them, you don't come back up. But my goodness, the same is probably true for spaceships or ship or anything, really. The only thing I would get on, no, not even a big wheel. I was going to say a big wheel, but no, I feel like those are inherently dangerous. Anything is any vehicle. That's why I like to stay put. I don't even like chairs that are easy to move. Like, I want a chair that's substantial because I'm afraid it'll teeter-totter over. Or who knows? Now I'm scaring myself. I feel like the chair I'm in isn't safe. I like to, a lot of times I have a one-legged stool that I like to sit on as a Zen practice. And it takes a lot of balance. It's like one of those stability balls. People always want to come up with different ways of sitting at their desk, but they always come back to the Mikimoto Enron chair or whatever it's called. There's a type of office chair that's just they finally found the design and everybody tries to second guess it. Say, I'm just going to sit on some old milk crates and a needlepoint pillow that my mama made. But at the end of the day, you're going to go, no, I'm going to come back to the chair that costs hundreds and hundreds of dollars. You can't. Listen, I have reinvented the wheel many, many times. And the best, I'm going to share it with you. The best wheel invention I made is not a true wheel. It's actually a 200-sided, is there more than 200? Thing, polygon. It's a polygon with sides, but they're so small that you don't quite see them. It looks like a wheel. What's the purpose of this? Traction. You just don't skid as much. Are you sure? No, I'm not. But I think if I was going to reinvent the wheel, that's what I would do. I'd start with a square, just keep adding sides until now it's rolling, but not even it out any more than that. Just get it round enough to roll, because close enough, good should not be the enemy of great or Jimmy Plimpton. I know you don't know him, but he doesn't like or need enemies. And certainly doesn't need an enemy of good. Could you imagine good being your enemy? Great or great being your, which is the one you don't want to be your enemy? I don't know. I know that I am close, long, lifelong pals with mediocrity. We are tight. And why? Why? Well, you know, here's the thing. Did you ever know how close the word is to meritocracy? Is what everybody wants. I want to be ruled by achievers. I don't. I don't really. You know, I want to be ruled by the average, and that would be mediocrity. And you say, well, that's what we have now. No, we have something way lower always than that. We're going to come up to mediocrity. And that's where I am. If you ever need that, say, Hardy, how do you do it? How do you keep from achieving excellence and at the same time avoid you know, total catastrophe. It's just, it's very zen. It's just you find a little sweet spot and then you cruise like finding an air current. I do that. I fly like a turkey, like a beautiful winged, long winged. There's turkeys that have wings like condors and they soar. And you say, I've seen WKRP and everything. Turkeys don't fly. They plunge. I don't know. I disagree. If you've ever flushed turkeys and they've had them like fly at you, and if they fly enough, good enough, they fly enough to be terrifying. And I think that that's, wouldn't you want to fly enough to be terrifying? When the United States of America was going to decide on its made-up cultural myths, they decided we need to select a national a bird that sort of represents us, one that we could put on a flag, a powerful one, a powerful bird. Like a, what's a powerful bird? There's so many that are scary. Like an owl would be a good one. No. So what they decided was Benjamin Franklin, who was one of the founding fathers and an orgiast, decided, hey, I like turkey. He said, the turkey is amazing because think about it. When you hold a big turkey leg, people go, you've been at the Ren Fair? Or what are you, you know, Henry VIII or something? It's a indication of power. Say, I'm so powerful, I'm wielding a big turkey leg. And they thought, you know, what's the whole turkey? Who hasn't been terrified by a turkey that they flushed that's come at them with that red thing hanging? So that red gobbledygook, when it's flying at you, you're supposed to mistake that for the entrails of the turkey's enemies. That it's got to say, I've already gotten one victim. See its entrails dangling from my mighty beak, says the American turkey. Oh, goggle, goggle, goggle. Goggle, gobble, gobble. I'm not going to do it. Some people can do a turkey impression. Gobble, gobble. Gobble, gobble, gook. Like that. And that might be James Mason, but it could also be a turkey. Oh my goodness, I have prepared a feast for you. I have put before you all the dishes that you like, and I put food on those dishes. And I prepared the dishes. I did not prepare the food. I ordered the food. The food is plastic, and it cost me thousands of dollars. I got it from Japan, and they made it there. I'd seen this. I was watching this Wim Wenders movie, and he's showing how this plastic food is manufactured, and it was making me so hungry, but at the same time, like, acquisitive. So I'll think, wow, what if I got some and then set it before you as a feast? I set all this before you as a feast, and I invite you dine upon it. The other day when I was composing poetry, I realized that you can make anything poetry by just by leading with the dependent clause. So like you say, under the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands. That's Longfellow. So normally you'd say, the village smithy stands under the spreading chestnut tree. That's not poetry. You know? In Xanadu, what happened there? Did Kublai Khan? What did Kublai Khan do? A mighty pleasure dome. He had it erected. But first, he demolished the beloved East Xanadu wing. So what is he doing? He's erecting a pleasure dome. Who doesn't? And if you just flip it then, and that's a poem. And so I like to...
I thought I heard my name.
Who is that?
It's Jimmy Claus.
Jimmy Claus? You're Santa's kid.
That's right. I'm a dependent Claus.
That's right. You're a dependent Claus. And then your grown sibling is an independent Claus.
No, he's dead.
All right. Bless you so much. That's what drives Santa. Santa, he's working out his grief.
I gotta give presents to all the children. I have to take care of all the children now.
No, you don't, man. No, you don't.
I have to help it.
And I think that's what's how I look at Santa. And I'm like, oh, no. You know, what is he doing? You can't give gifts to all the children of the world. You're going to kill yourself. That's why he's so heavy and all. He's just drowning in it. Oh, bless you. Santa, come on now. I'm sorry. Y'all, I could hear. It's so funny. Sometimes I can hear the clicks of the radio dial going off. Saying, I don't need that. He's making Santa out to be a character in a Hallmark. Don't dump on Hallmark dramas. Because I look at them, the same as daytime soap operas. I'm going, you're employing some buddies probably of mine. I'm all for it. Let's say you're an actor. You're massively attractive, but you're okay. How do you get work? You know? You can get lots of work, and you should, because not everybody has a great character face. You know, craggly old, say, look at you, Burt Mustin, you're going to get...
That's right, I'm going to get many parts.
Just saw Burt Mustin in a wonderful Dragnet. He dominated. You know, it's so funny because when he brings his acting style to something else, like All in the Family, it looks a little, but like you bring it to, he had that Dragnet style down. It was so good. And the only thing, I half wish it was in puppets, but it was okay with live actors. And I know that Dragnet's never been with puppets, but it could be. Oh my goodness. Let's get back to the meal. Young Frankenstein already used that joke about you haven't touched your food, and then he touches it and he goes, I've touched it. He violently touches it. So I won't say that, oh, you haven't touched your food, but I noticed you're not eating. And so I, in consultation with your doctor, have ordered some Ensure. And we're going to force it down your throat like a goose. Oh, that makes me... Who has ever had pâté? I was in France one time during Christmas, and there was a couple things they forced on me that I did not enjoy. Foie gras. I don't like it. Even if it was like not... Even if it just grew, say, I just grew this foie gras. It's not from a goose or anything. It's just it's a relative of kale. I would still say no. There's something about it. It's too fatty, nasty... Ugh, I really, really don't like it. The other thing I don't like are just straight up roasted chestnuts. Now, maybe they're good in something, but just straight up roasted chestnuts. And I enjoy the smell of anything, but there's something about them that you think they're going to be great. So I just enjoy some roasted chestnuts. And you taste it and you go, this is like, it's like throw up in a little, it's a throw up nut. And you go, I don't want this. And I do remember in France, I sat there one time in the Place de la Comédie in Montpellier, France. And I'm sitting there and I was watching someone sell hot chestnuts, roasted chestnuts right around the holidays. You think, oh, that's the most romantic thing. And really, I just count how many people went by, took a bite, spit it out. And quite a few. I'm not alone. You know, I noticed that at the cilantro stand as well. People going, oh, no, that's not true. I had to, one time I was working at a place and there was a guy worked at the vegetable stand next door and he would grow his own cilantro on the side. I know where this story's going.
It's nowhere.
You're right. I just realized that. There is this phenomenon, and I see it, bless you all in the comments, and I do this too. We have been programmed, and I believe it's because of the internet, that if should someone say a word, you gain the overconfidence of the AI. Now, the complaint people have with AI, that at least the kind of chat one, is it doesn't ever say, I don't know. And I think that's one of my superpowers. I'm known for saying I don't know. And when I decided to start saying I don't know when I didn't know, was surprised. Because I realized that I had sort of been conditioned to download everything I know about a thing on command. And I don't know whether it was school that did that, like I say, or internet, but you hear a word, there's a blah, 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 cilantro. And all of a sudden, your brain pulls up everything you know about it.
Well, it's coriander. I mean, the British call it coriander.
Something like that.
But we call coriander as the seeds of the cilantro.
And sometimes you might know a little bit about a thing, but gosh, is it enough to say or contribute, really? And it's funny online when it does it, because somebody like a site like Marie Curie will say something. So, it's Marie Curie who's discovered the thing. And then Tom in Iowa will go, hey, just chiming in. I thought I remembered reading it something about x-rays or I don't know. But that always happens. And so, well, thank you. Thank you for adding that, because I was like, I'm writing an encyclopedia. And I was afraid that I forgot some of the more trivial information. But that's a thing that happens. So I love that. I would learn on radio to do it on purpose. You'll say a thing and go, I know this is going to, people are going, well, I want to say more. So I'll say something wrong or get a name like slightly wrong. And I'm sorry. I'm not doing it to be mean or anything. I just, what's it like? What's the equivalent? What is the equivalent? I don't know. When you go to a place, there's all these catfish in the river there. If you throw a piece of bread in, they'll swarm. Is it that? It doesn't hurt the catfish. And it's fun to watch or something. I don't know exactly. Oh, my goodness. You know it's hard to say, what are you thankful for? Well, so much. I don't know exactly why I have to list it, but I will, because, well, when I start listing, it implies that there's things I'm not thankful for, and sometimes I'm thankful for negative things that happen to me because they disabuse me. So there's, what's that mean? I don't want to say wake you up, but like wake you up. There's some ideas that you should be disabused of. Now, how do we do that? For instance, your Thanksgiving, it's so oppressive to some people, you know, because there's so many of us that are lonely or we don't have our families around. There's all this pressure. Oh, well, go be with your family. My family is on the Nautilus and they are homicidal maniacs who ram ships. Well, maybe you could try to make up with your father, Nemo. Nemo? Do you know what that means? What? It means nobody. Oh, wow. What a rough name. Nemo? Yes, that's what he's killed. That's what Cyclopes, you know. Nemo killed me. Nemo's killed me. So, okay, you're good then. No, Nemo! Well, then, I don't know why there was confusion. People go, oh, Captain Nemo? No, I mean, no one. But not, he's not nobody. So he killed Cyclopes. And then who else did he kill? He killed all these people on the ship and everything. And they weren't doing it. Some of them were just, like they said, some of them were just transporting munitions that were mined by slaves. So it is, the movie does give you the impression that he's a bad guy. When in reality, I'm thinking, ooh. I mean, really, that's the, you know, he's interrupting the munitions trade and the slave trade and everything, and they're making him out to be insane. And the most insane thing is his devotion to sustainability. I know, right? Doesn't that make him crazy? I'm psychotic because I am trying not to destroy the Earth. That does make you a little crazy, Nemo. I know. I'm wacky. He is. He's so wacky. He doesn't want to. I think that the poor movie, because the movie doesn't know what to do. And then it's my understanding that the children's record, he doesn't die at the end. I've decided not to die, but to reform. And I'm offering all of my technology, like my seaweed cigars. this is the thing I don't get about the seaweed cigar. Because imagine that. So you're burning one. Say, oh, I love this. This is good weed. Where'd you get this pot? Is, you know, I'm trying to think of this. Is this from California, Ohio? And you go, no, this is seaweed. And you go, oh, I used to have that in the 80s. It would wash up in the Gulf of Mexico sometimes. And you'd get it, find some on the beach, and you go, well, I think it's still pot. And you go, no, not that kind. So he was saying in the movie that he was rolling cigars out of seaweed, and they're smoking them like that. I would know immediately. I'm no cigar aficionado. I'm sorry, TM, that's a magazine. But I know the difference. Isn't that weird? Because there's times that, I have admittedly gone to a sushi bar, stuck a nori roll in my mouth and started to try to light it. And the lady comes out, no, 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 no. I go, oh, what? What? But you gave me the cigar. And she goes, that's not a cigar. What's wrong with you? And tobacco is not used for sushi anymore. And people go, man, this one, the one roll makes me, the one makes me super sick. I don't want to say it out loud. Which one? Don't get the, don't get the Monte Cristo. Let's just say that. It's not, I don't think, it's. I smoked cigars at one point in my life. You don't smoke them, some people do smoke them regularly. If you're a detective or you're a newspaper editor, you know, and you're like, Kolchak, get back out there. When you have the cigar hanging out of your mouth or I don't know what. But most of the time you just smoke them every once in a while. If some kind of, like a bro relative is coming, you know, they bring you that. And they're wearing their team jersey. And say, I brought you a cigar. And you go, all right, that's a great team jersey. And I'm smoking it. It just feels like we're at an elegant men's club in the 19th century. With you with there with a big number on your chest and your short pants and your increasingly hairless legs. And it does, but I like to dress up for people because I just think, oh my gosh, I've looked in the mirror when I'm slovenly dressed and I think this adds nothing. And I want, it's not that I want people to like me, but I don't want to add to people's visual misery. And I've driven the length and breadth and width and ZYX axis of this country. And I have seen what Ian Nairn calls the goop at the intersections of our great highways. And you get off and you go, look at all these signs and fast foods and strip malls, and every place in America has the same featureless goop. All this dispiriting, discouraging architecture, or what passes for it. Oh, the agony of it. And you feel like, wouldn't you like to see someone in a nice suit or something? I don't care. I know. Let's get past that. Let's get past it. Because I realize now you're so, nothing feels like, it's good. You're cynical about everything. But I tell you, I'm going to give you the key. At the 30-minute mark, I always wait because I've got to weed out some folks from listening. I have to, some of the knobs have to click off before I tell you some of the bigger messages I have. And I would never go on the radio and say absolutely nothing. I'm going to say something powerful now. And that is the appreciation of beauty. You want to be thankful for something. So, well, beauty. I didn't tell you what was beautiful. That's your life quest. But what I'm saying is think about that. Think about beauty and appreciating beauty. Now, if you get deep about it, you will come to some conclusions that other cultures and other humans have come to before. And I'm thinking of Senno Rikyo, who was the tea master of the 16th century. And you've heard of wabi-sabi, wabi, a sort of brokenness, a beauty in imperfection. So not all things that are everyone thinks are beautiful. You find beauty in the brokenness, and then the world cracks open like a beautiful egg. And you see between things, you know, like the true nature of the universe, that embedded in things are meanings that transcend thought and words. You know, beauty is an experience, isn't it? So I would say that should be your quest for Thanksgiving. You may not have a meal with this brown, this crusty. Every time I see a Thanksgiving turkey, I think of a recurring gag on the Three Stooges. Well, I've talked about many times. They did it with Curly, did it with Shemp, and that's having the parrot go into the plastic turkey and walk around and squawk. And that'll put you off a turkey. Again, it would be funny, though, to recreate it, not with a real parrot, but something like made out of, I would make it out of fennel. Make a parrot out of fennel, and then put that in your tofu turkey. I don't know. I'm going to work on this. I love it. It's at least a cake, you know, because you could do that, I think, with the fondant. I'm blessed because I'm here. I'm at your feast. And we're finding beauty. Some people find beauty in what I do, and they can find beauty in my words, especially if I lead with a dependent clause. It was on this radio that Hardy said the things that hit my heart, the things that rhymed with something, the things that rhymed with heart. You know what I'm saying? Oh, my goodness. No potty. Dale last week, I think, commented, what? He hasn't said anything about poop. So there you go. And I did with the whales, too. I like to include eating, pooping, and talking on every show because that's a lot of times what we do. And sometimes we don't talk. So I include sleeping. I always leave a little portion for you to sleep. I discovered the other day that there are some lectures online. I think Brian Cox. Is that the British one? I get the Brian, the physicist Brian's confused, and also the physicist Sean Carroll, not the biologist Sean Carroll, and there are two, but their lectures are ASMR, go to sleepy things. You can turn them on, and it really just, they tell you about the universe and the most amazing things about it, and quantum physics, and you... And I love that because it didn't, the information didn't go in, you know, but I started to dream. They would say something and I would think about it and it would open a little door to somewhere else. They would door they didn't even think they were going to open. And I crawled in it. I crawled in it because I've seen all the movies where Alice or one of them, you know, crawls in the tiny door and there's adventure awaits. So I did and I just fell asleep, but I'm sure I had wonderful dreams. Which I do because of the allergy medicine. I want to be your allergy medicine. Not only do I want to clear your head, decongest you, open your eyes to beauty, but I want to make you dream. I want to make you have hallucinations that introduce to you possibilities. And that's what the weird does. It brings to you things that you might, thoughts that you might not get to in a linear way because you think, well, there's nothing down that avenue. Let's explore it. You know, if you're if you're geo-guessing or something and it lands you in this place.
Where?
Well, in a weird planet. Who are you, visitor?
I am from another planet.
What planet are you from? Earth? You look like you're from Earth.
No, I am from Google Earth.
How is Google Earth different than real Earth?
Google Earth is a planet that just exists in one single moment, frozen in time.
Oh,
and you can travel through it, but time stops.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right? And it's a different moment all over the planet, but it's one from like maybe a year ago.
Wow. Interesting. So let's say I'm driving down the street, and I see there's a little patch of land there where a building used to be. They demolished it because they're going to build something new.
I heard a pleasure dome's going in.
Well, I don't know what they're building, but every time I drive by, I think, I don't remember what used to be there. I know there was a building there, and I drove by it every day of my life, but now that it's gone, I don't remember what was there. Can you help me, visitor from another planet, Google Earth?
I don't know. Let me see. Nope, that building's gone from my Earth, too.
But don't you have that thing where you can go back in time?
Hang on a second. Pet hospital.
What?
Pet hospital.
That's right! That's right, Anderson Pet Hospital.
Yeah, not now. Now it's a dorm.
It will be. I thought you said Pleasure Dome.
That's the name of the dorm. It's private.
Oh, I love when they do that for students. Pleasure Dome Estates. I'm going to move in there. It's going to be lovely. I bet there is a place called Xanadu.
So I was living in Landis Hall, but I think I'm going to move next year to Xanadu. I've got 8 other guys that are going to get an apartment. It's got 1 room and no rooms. Also, there's no rooms.
So I don't know how that's going to work out. 8 people, no rooms. But I think that's better than living in the dorms where all your meals are provided. I'm not going to pay for it. This is the last year of me paying for college. Maybe I do have children in college, but if I did, I would fear they were going to stay there forever, because I remember just seeing people that say, you're still going strong, because going to college is a bit like, do you ever hear those old people that they sell their house and they're now we're living on a cruise? People do that with college. So if you have enough money, you can just live on a cruise. We live on the Festiva Sea Witch. Oh, that's not a bad name. Let me think of a better name for a cruise ship. The Festiva Sea Venture. Okay. So they live on the Festiva Sea Venture now, and they have their own cabin. Is this a cabin? I don't remember. It's a stateroom. Oh, my goodness. Why do they say that? Because when you're at sea, there is no government. And so every cabin is an independent state, and you are governor of that independent state / room. And when you show up at the captain's dinner that night and sit at the captain's table, you are the representative of a semi-autocratic, independent suite, really. if you've really, some of them might be suites. I don't know. They assume you're not going to spend much time in your actual room unless you're trying not to throw up or something like that, or just sleeping. But otherwise, you'd be out with the buffet. So they don't spend as much energy on these cruise ships on the room as they do on the ice sculptures, because you're going to be there out there. So I went on one. And it was a beautiful ice sculpture. And it was, I think it was Venom from the comic books. It has like hands out. And on every ice finger, because it was like a coming at you pose, on every ice finger there was a shrimp. And at the bowl, it made look like blood. It's cocktail sauce. Made look like blood. But it had, it's just ketchup and horseradish. Sauce. Isn't that something? Horseradish is the secret ingredient in every secret sauce. They go, we're not giving away our famous recipe. It's horseradish sauce. Dang it. Like I can't taste it. People do that with ginger too. What's the secret ingredient? It's ginger. Dang it. I can taste it. Dang it. You can't always hide your secret ingredient. Mine is absurdity. And boy, it's flavorful. You can smell it right through the microphone. Can't you smell what I'm talking about? I can smell your words, Hardy. Smell of it. Smell my words. Oh, this Thanksgiving, we are gathered here today at this table of abundance. I was watching a show one time, and I think it was might have been a local cooking show, and it was a fellow who was, he had a cornucopia. He had a literal, like a horn with a bunch of stuff coming out of it, Just like the Fruit of the Loom logo, which may or may not have that, which is the subject of a Mandela Effect thing. But anyway, Fruit of the Loom logo. Search Mandela Effect Fruit of the Loom, commenters. So he had a cornucopia on there, and maybe he was making it out of bread, but he kept calling it a copacornea. Now, he said copacornea so many times, nobody corrected him. And now I'm thinking, is that also another name for cornucopia, the copacornea? It is very funny how we can make a mistake, be confused, be ignorant, and then somehow, in our ignorant confidence, convince others that that's correct. And they begin to doubt themselves because of your confidence. So this is a trick that we use in entertainment. You know, it seems like, well, he did have that dependent clause there at the beginning, so this must be poetry. So I'm tricking you in a way. Well, I'm really only tricking Ken. I think all the listeners are going, why is this? So you don't only, how many people do you really have to fool? And you know, you can't fool them forever, so that's why we give thanks. The whole thankful thing is, if you were immortal, you probably wouldn't be very thankful. You'd be like, so what? But I think the threat of death is like, you know, really focuses the mind. I've been like that every time I'm in the hospital, which hasn't been very many times, but I'm always like, oh, I love you people, so grateful. I'm so thankful. But it's mainly because I realize what the alternative is. And I think that way with food or abundance or having your food, your needs met, I think the thankful part is just realizing the temporary nature, the transient nature, the wabi, that there is beauty in this impermanence, that it's a rough struggle. But there's little sparkly things, aren't there? There's little wonderful hints of something that shine through. I don't know where they come from, who's responsible for them, but I want to make it clear that I am for those beautiful little spots of joy, that I am for these needs being met, that I'm for love. And so I demonstrate that. I'm demonstrative. I give thanks. Who am I giving thanks to? It doesn't matter. All it matters is that something I think is positive happens. I want to acknowledge it. So, if there is something somewhere, someone looking for a reaction on my part, I've given it. Did you like the gift? Yes or no? So, it may not be affecting anything. I have no way of knowing, but gosh, you know, I'm just going to keep screaming and putting a SOS out in shells on this island. I'm always going to cry out from the wilderness. I will always cry out from my loneliness. That's what this microphone is. That's what this radio job is of mine. It's to speak your loneliness out loud, this solitary voice coming out of nothing. Ooh, what channel have I tuned into today on Thanksgiving? What message am I receiving from the ether? Should I silently in my car or my home or my apartment express my gratitude? To whom? Perhaps to myself. Perhaps to myself for meeting my own needs. Thank you. Thank you for taking care of you. And perhaps you should promise to take even more care of you. I don't know what that involves. That's always a search. Don't come to me for the specifics. You know, if I say, you know, how do I get to this place? And I say, go north. You say, well, go north. Well, that could be like, I have spoken. You know, yes, there's going to be little twists and turns along the way, be problems you have to solve. I can't help you there. I can just say, without fear of contradiction, that if you want to get to Cincinnati from Lexington, Kentucky, go north. Maybe north at a slight angle, but there you have it. The details of it are up to you. Well, how do I? My car's not. But I don't have a. Do you have a compass? No. But do you know what way north is? Yeah, it's that way.
Well, it's just a bit. You have your answer.
That's why it makes it kind of unsatisfying for me when I say something like, oh, the meaning of life is the quest for beauty. Well, there you go. That's so simplistic. And it really tells you nothing, doesn't it? Or does it? Because what if you didn't know that? Well, it might not be true. Well, you have something to do then. Prove me wrong. I won't have those provocative tables that people have at college campuses in the quad. Hardy White's going to start to do that. I'm going to say, I have a big sign that says something like, you know, I love you, prove me wrong. Oh, no, people would. Hang on. Something positive, though. Let's say you're worth it. Or I don't know. I wish people would ease off on themselves. I can always tell if you're coming after me, man, you're just looking for a surrogate you to hassle. I really do believe that. And that's been my experience, is that it's these uncalm hearts. And as someone who's raised children, I haven't mentioned it very often, but I can assure you that it's that how that heart's aimed. You know, you must. It's okay to love you. I love you.
Well, you don't know me. That's how I managed to do it.
So I'm loving the you I know you could possibly be, because none of us are as dissimilar as we think.
But I am an echinoderm.
I don't even care. I don't care if you don't have a central nervous system. There is something that biological life tends toward. So I love you. I'm giving you a hug. If there's anything that I can scrape off you that's stuck to you, that's what I'm here for. Can't get it all. I'm going to get a little bit off your back you can't reach. That's it. I got no grand ambitions for you. I just show you a little bit of love, and then maybe if other people do that too, then your heart is elevated and calmed. You find joy. You can find beauty in life, something we all work towards. Now, as someone whose brain doesn't always cooperate, sometimes all the things can be in place for me, you know? But I have to have things to do when my brain revolts, because it does. And I'll be sitting around and everything is seems fine, but my view of the world will go dark, and I will go dark on myself. And so I have to find some message from my light self that will reach into this darkness and give me a hand and give me a rope. And it's me who pulls me out. It's me, other me. It's Google Earth me from some moment frozen in time where there was joy and beauty. And it can reach into my dark times and say, hold on to my hand in the form of this guitar. And you sit there and you play Big Rock Candy Mountains until you feel better. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, there's all things that winos like. There's cigarettes, and the cops are nice, and there's drunken things all night. Oh, the gutters are filled with soup, and the garbage cans have wings. And the, you know, I don't know. And my big old nose has 20 toes, and there's elephants with the something bows. With those speakers bows on Big Rock Scanty Mountains. These new Bose speakers are so impressive. I remember thinking that years ago. It was like in the 70s or something. Say, that Bose speaker, it's a tiny little thing, but then how can it make so much sound? I don't know, shut up and drink your Coors, which I drove all the way across the country because you can't get it here. You used to not be able to get Coors beer on the East Coast. And then you'd be like, God, I got to have Coors because I can't get it. And then you could, and it was like, oh, Jesus. So think about that in your life, too. That's Coors. I feel like show business is my cores. You know, because it's this thing out from California, and you think you want it, and then you go, wow, this is just like refreshing urine or something. I don't even know, but it's not for me. My friends, when I give thanks, I try to remember that I may not have that gift yet. Or I may have it and not know it's a gift. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a bunch of unopened mail in our lives. There's a bunch of boxes in a closet somewhere. And we really haven't opened them all yet. So we've received things that we don't yet know are a bomb or a gift. And so I'd say go in there, open your mail, see what you got, because it's time to celebrate those gifts. It's the day to give thanks. We're going to give it for whatever reason, not other people's made-up values or anything, but our own. Say, it doesn't hurt us. An attitude of gratitude feels good. So I'll give you no other reason to do it, not because you should or the universe wants you to, but because gratitude is related to seeing beauty and to seeing the wabi, the brokenness, and appreciating the imperfection. Time, what time does to us. I'm loving it. I'm loving my aging self. So I'm getting that now. You go, wow, I'm broke. I'm just now breaking this thing in. And it feels kind of good. I was a little precious about it. And I see so many people, so many young people, going to that gym and paralyze what they think is perfection. And they don't yet understand beauty. And they're using some, like, maybe a robot's idea of what beauty is. Robots are imposing their idea of what beauty is. That's why you're going to the gym looking like that all the time. Good Lord. That is literally unnecessary. You know? Oh my gosh. The problem isn't you. The problem is our beauty detectors are all messed up. They've been hijacked by those who want to use all the, that steal everything we have and sell it back to us. And one of them is your idea of what gratitude is, of beauty. Take them back. Take them back. It's about you. Not in a selfish way. When I say it's about you, think about this. I'm talking to lots of people. So it isn't some selfish thing. I'm saying, all of you be selfish or something. That's not it at all. You know. Think I'm talking to the Eunice of all of us. I'm talking to Eunice. Eunice is going, what? I just heard my name. I'm talking to you, Eunice. From what, Mama's Family or something? Is that a name? Now that I've seen it. Eunice. You know, I always think that, I don't know why penis isn't a country name. It sounds like it should be. Cletus is and stuff like that. It's just, if you were going through the, I've learned a lot of this by just doing the name game. Because that encourages you to substitute the consonants in your name with other consonants. And then you can get wonderful variations. Isn't that what we're all about? These variations on a theme. I love you. All your different ways to serve turkey. Some of you are turkey tetrazzini. Hey! I don't know, man. Other views are turkey something else. And some of you are jive turkeys. And I feel like I am. In so many ways, one of them goofy birds, kind of where my gut's bigger than my brain, for one. I've got little beady little eyes. I've got nice feathers. I'll give you that. Turkey feathers are underrated. They're cool looking feathers. And that's all I'm going to say. I had a acquaintance who was a turkey hunter, and he would take people out turkey hunting, and he was a large, mythical man of Native American extraction. and he gave me two turkey wings. Not like turkey lays, not like, you know, medieval times. The feathers, just all the feathers, and I still have them. I thought, these are gorgeous. I don't know if this is right or wrong or what I'm going to do with them, but I'm keeping the turkey feathers, and maybe I'll, you know, make a really elegant feather vest. I don't even know what you do with them. I really don't know. They're just hanging on my wall, and full of mites, maybe. So there you go. And I want you to be a turkey like Hardy's a turkey. Big, goofy turkey. Don't worry about it. I love you. You love you. That makes all of us. So we're, oh my goodness, Thanksgiving. I can't believe we're at the end of the show, but we're not at the end of Thanksgiving. I want you to enjoy yourself. If pie is a part of your life, get into it. I love pie. I love pies. I love making pies. I love serving them. I love eating them. I could just eat pies because the filling is infinite. And pie crust, that's what you do with butter. So I hope that you are enjoying all those wonderful things. You are listening today to Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, online, WFMU.org, worldwide. Did I say New York City and Rockland County? I think I did. I often, that station ID stuff, that is the Lord's Prayer. That is the Shema of radio broadcasting. You go, if I can't think about it, I just have to say it. You know, it's the Ve'ahavta. Think of that. Try to say the Ve'ahavta while you're thinking about it, or slow down, or what I say. What's the eighth word, or something like that? What are you talking about? The Lord's Prayer, or what's some? I don't know. I'm trying to list all the religions here. The Heart Sutra. You can't try to think about that as you recite it. Oh, I love you so much. I'm so glad. I'm blessed. Hardy is glad that he has been with you today, and I want to wish you a blessed week. And I will see you again next week. And I'm just doing this because I like to get to that.
You are tuned in to Mahogany with Bailey, except without Bailey. It's with Dave the Spaz tonight. That was Thelonious Monk with Epistrophe. This is Bo Diddley.
Don't let them drop it. Don't let them drop it. Stop it. Bebop it.